Your case is not too difficult.
It was Agbako, a renowned witch doctor of Abia, Ohafia. He was aged but physically and spiritually strong. He was speaking to a young couple who had come to seek help from him in order to bear children. They had been married for only a full year, but Benjamin Kalu was impatient. In fact, continued Agbako, it is good news that I have for you. The oracle says that one of your ancestors, Jansi, the great wizard of Akanu, who dined with Ubina, Utpabi, Amadioha and Kamalu Ikere, who commanded men, wild beasts and evil spirits. Jansi wants to return to this world. Benjamin and Comfort looked at each other in amazement.
So are we going to have a child?
Asked Benjamin.
Iroha, Agbako called the young man by his native name.
My father, answered Benjamin,
your wife will bear a son,
a great son. His eyes were set as he spoke. Benjamin smiled. His wife must have been happy too, but she didn't show it. This whole idea of coming to a witch doctor didn't go down well with her. She had been raised in a Christian home. Her father was one of the first elders of their church in Ohafia, but she wasn't firm in her faith. Besides, she was just 20. She couldn't but succumb to her husband's persuasion. The oracle says you must call your son no other name but Jansi. Also, do not forget this. When the child is born, your wife must put the afterbirth in a small clay pot and bring it here to me alone. Agbako paused for a moment. At his last statement, Comfort's mouth dropped open. She put her right hand over it. Her husband just listened. You must also buy a black he-goat and keep it, so that immediately she returns to you, you will come here alone with the he-goat. Then I will tell you other things you must bring. Benjamin himself was beginning to get scared.
Drop your gifts and go,
ordered Agbako. Comfort dropped a few tubers of yam and some bundles of pumpkin leaves on the floor, as well as a lump of chalk. They thanked the old man and left. The couple left the village. It was an eerie place. Most of the people the Kalus passed on the way had such grim looks on their faces. You could smell witchcraft in the air.
I told you we shouldn't come to this place,
complained Comfort.
Keep quiet, woman. What do you know? Do you think my family is ready to wait for another year for me to have a son?
Ben Kalu hissed.
We will do what Agbako told us to do.
Comfort began to cry.
Woman, what is it?
Benjamin snapped, standing still with palms spread.
What if my father finds out?
Sobbed Comfort.
If you don't tell him, he won't find out.
I'll tell him. I won't do it.
Comfort was frantic. Ben held her by her right shoulder, stopping their walk briefly again. He looked into her eyes and warned her, pointing to her face.
Look, if you try that, you will regret it for the rest of your life.
Comfort cried until they got close to their home, Akanu in Ohafia. Months later, the Kalus moved to Lagos after the child had been born.
What is his name?
Asked Maureen, Comfort's younger sister. She had come to help her sister in Lagos after her school certificate examinations. Both of them were seated on the veranda of their small flat.
Jansi, Comfort said, smiling as she fondled the newly born child.
Nja what?
Maureen exclaimed.
Do you know what that means?
What?
Does it matter what it means?
Jansi means medicine pot.
So?
Ben says he's the reincarnation of his great-grandfather.
Reincarnation?
Maureen scoffed.
So you believe in reincarnation?
I don't have to believe in reincarnation.
Comfort was still playing with the baby, paying little attention to her sister.
Sister, you have not made a decision about who you want to serve. The Bible says, choose you this day whom you will serve.
Comfort interrupted, waving her palm at Maureen's face.
Don't insult me. I don't want to hear any SU rubbish now. Go and play, small girl.
Maureen stood up and walked indoors. She was a very committed Christian.
saved and nurtured in the scripture union. Every morning, she woke up quite early and prayed in the sitting room where she always slept. She observed that on certain days, Jansi would start crying as soon as she started getting earnest in prayer. She would have to stop and go over to his cot to pick him up. What bothered her most was that whenever she carried him, he would look at her face and grin as if he knew what he had done. On some nights, when Maureen woke up by chance, it would seem as if Jansi was not in his cot. She would jump to her feet to check properly, only to find him wide awake. There were many other strange events, some regular, some happening just once during Jansi's early days. His parents weren't too concerned about the stories Maureen told them. She seemed to be the only one who saw those things happen. Jansi and his siblings, who came later, were raised in a comfortable home. Their father did all kinds of business, but mostly, he was at the seaports, clearing imported goods. He was a good businessman. He made sure his wife and children had whatever material things they needed, but he was hardly home. When Jansi had finished secondary school, Chief Kalu made arrangements for him to go to study in the United States. Jansi was only 19, but he boasted to his parents that he could take care of himself. He was probably right. He was very charming. He got along with everyone, especially the girls. He couldn't be intimidated, but he wasn't a bully. His father, however, made contacts with distant relatives in the US who would keep an eye on his eldest son. The D-Day was a really sunny day. The Kalus and their extended family members arrived at Murtala Mohammed International Airport at about 5:30 p.m. in a small motorcade. The flight was scheduled for 7 p.m. Jansi was excited. He wondered whether he would meet Michael Jackson, MC Hammer, Bobby Brown, and all the other pop and rock stars. He was obsessed with music. Nkechi, his immediate younger sister, was not so excited. She would miss her brother so much. His mother felt it too. Chief Kalu was proud of himself being able to send his son to America. You could see the look of satisfaction on his face. His disposition exposed his ego. He kept adjusting his Isiagu attire. Time and time again, he would stand up from the reception area and go to see whether the plane was about to leave. His wife, who was by now very enlightened due to much exposure to city life and society, tried her best to control him. "Ben, why are you behaving like a bushman? Won't they announce when the plane is about to board?" He would just laugh heartily. At about 6:30 p.m., the announcement came. Jansi hugged his parents tightly. He hugged Nkechi, Aunt Maureen, his grandparents, and others. He left amidst tears and smiles, waves and shouts of bye-bye, take care, and all such parting words. He joined other passengers as they walked into a long corridor which led out to the tarmac. From that distance, Jansi saw the airplane. A small group of uniformed men were loading the last bits of luggage. He never imagined that the airplane would be that large. Jansi finally reached the mighty 747 Airbus amidst other passengers. He was about to climb up when he saw a tall, very dark man wearing a leather overall and a hat at the airplane's doorway. Jansi stopped. He was captivated by the man's aura. The man climbed down the staircase. Those behind Jansi wondered why he stood gazing at the staircase. "Jansi," the stranger called softly, touching him on both shoulders. His voice was deep and authoritative, but not scary. Jansi startled when the man called his name. He had never met him before.
"This is not the path you must take,"
the man continued.
"Come with me."
The man turned him around and they both walked back to the airport buildings. Jansi's family members were still there. They were waiting for the plane to take off before going home. Jansi saw them, but they seemed not to see him.
"Your people cannot see you,"
confirmed the stranger. They walked side by side until they got to the car park. The man opened the middle door of a black three-door Mercedes-Benz car and motioned to Jansi to enter. He then entered after Jansi. A uniformed chauffeur was already in the car. He started the car as soon as the first man shut his door. not saying a word. Jiangxi suddenly broke out of the effect of the stranger's seeming hypnosis.
Who are you? And where are you taking me?
Jiangxi asked, looking at the man.
I am your spiritual guide, and I am taking you to where you came from.
The man answered succinctly, without looking at him. 2 hours later, Jiangxi opened his eyes. He had been sleeping. He blinked. He thought he was dreaming. Is this America? He asked the man who bent over to look into his face.
Jiangxi, you are welcome back, said Veruca, his spiritual guide.
Jiangxi was lying on the floor. His arms and legs were spread so that his head, hands and feet coincided with the 5 points of a pentagram drawn on the floor. It seemed with white chalk. He was completely naked. He tried to move his body, but he couldn't. He turned his head to one side.
You! I saw you in a dream!
He exclaimed when he saw Veruca.
It wasn't a dream, boy.
The man replied.
I am as real as you are.
Veruca was clad in a bright red robe, as were the other 6 men who walked endlessly in a circle around Jiangxi. Jiangxi looked straight ahead of him. A certain distance beyond was a strange creature seated on what seemed to be a throne. He wore a black robe decorated with red, gold, and purple embroidery. He wore a crown having a snake's head sticking out in front of it. He was the blackest entity Jiangxi had ever seen. He had eyeballs that looked like 2 red lights. He looked straight at Jiangxi. Jiangxi looked away. The whole place looked like a basketball court. The inclined seating arrangement was filled with all sorts of creatures. They hummed in low tones as the 7 men walked round Jiangxi.
Who are you? And what is this place?
Jiangxi screamed, trying to get himself off the floor. He seemed to be stuck.
This is the Nether Realm, and we are the Black Witches of Tartarus. You were born to be one of us, the one who will make our powers known to the people in your nation. You will have this limitless power, limitless freedom. No one at all will be able to withstand you. Nothing will be a hindrance to you. Wealth, knowledge, power, limitless power. All will be yours. All you need to do is yield your heart to the Lord.
Sri Veruca was still moving around with him, with the other red-robed men, as he spoke in answer to Jiangxi's questions. He continued, Jiangxi, you must understand that your first cosmic initiation was completed 19 years ago through your mother. She brought us your blood, your life. You have no choice but to confirm your initiation and then be endued with power, limitless power. Jiangxi blinked over and over again. He thought he was having a nightmare.
Mommy! Daddy!
Jiangxi screamed, shutting his eyes. He probably hoped he would get their attention so that they would wake him up.
You seem not to understand.
Veruca laughed. You are among friends, Jiangxi. We seek only your consent, and all you want will be yours. The voice that spoke shook the whole place. At the voice, all the red-robed men fell on their faces, and the humming stopped momentarily. Only that voice reigned. It was the voice of Ceciri, Lord of the Black Witches of Tartarus.
What if I don't give my consent?
Jiangxi asked fearfully. His eyes were wide open. He looked from side to side.
Your consent is already given.
Your mother did it, and it cannot be reversed. All you need to do is confirm it. Veruca spoke again.
What if I don't confirm it?
Jiangxi cried. If you don't confirm it, we will sacrifice you to the Most High. Your mother has already offered you. When Veruca said this, 1,000 voices roared in excitement. Jiangxi wept and wept.
Mommy, why did you do this to me?
As if his mother was there.
What will you do to me?
Jiangxi asked Veruca. He had read a little about the occult. He knew that an initiation wasn't child's play.
Stop interrogating this court, thundered Ceciri from his throne. Your options have been made clear. Do not keep us waiting.
Jiangxi cried aloud in desperation.
Do it!
That was Jansi's consent. At once, two men rushed out from the sitting area dressed in black aprons and necklaces made of beads to prepare an altar between the pentagram and Sesiri's throne. The humming was still going on, and Veruca was uttering incantations.
You are Jansi, the sacred pot of power. No one can discern your content, but you are full to the brim.
As Veruca spoke, the other men walking around Jansi would flog him with long whips, one stroke at the end of each claws. Jansi yelled each time the stroke landed. Sri Veruca kept speaking.
Jansi, master of all realms. He flies vulture. He swims python. He crawls a cat. Jansi, custodian of ancient secrets. Let your strength be roused. Let your power come forth.
Jansi, commander of the cosmic forces. Let your servants manifest.
Jansi, master of all time and space. Let the elements honor you.
All this flogging and making of incantations went on for hours upon hours non-stop. When Sri Veruca seemed to have run out of things to say, everything was still. Veruca brought out a black-headed knife with a one-foot blade. In some sort of mystic dance, he pointed it upwards to Lord Sesiri, turned round and round with it, and finally pointed it at Jansi. He then made a fist with his left hand above the blade and slashed nothing. Jansi screamed, breaking the deadly silence.
Mother, I will kill you! I will kill you! I will kill you!
He had been emasculated. There was blood all over his abdomen and laps. Sri Veruca went over to the pentagram and picked up the spongy organ. He threw it into the fire burning in the altar that stood before Sesiri. As it burned, the wound on Jansi's flesh was seared. He cried out more and more in great pain. Sri Veruca picked up the organ from the fire with his unprotected hand after it was burnt. He gave it to Lord Sesiri and watched him eat it. When Lord Sesiri had eaten it, he said,
"This is your link to me, O son of man. This covenant cannot be broken. You are Sesiri's virgin."
He then gave Veruca a rough black stone, which was about the size of a lemon. Veruca bent it in the fire. As he did, he made an incantation.
"May your hearts be turned to stone. Your will and emotions no longer your own."
He picked up the stone, walked over to the pentagram, and forced the stone into Jansi's chest.
"Receive Sesiri's heart, and may all the wicked spirit of the nether realm obey you."
The initiation was then complete. Veruca held Jansi up by his left hand. The two men who had set up the fire in the first place rushed forward with a red rope and clothed Jansi. A few days later, over the news, Jansi's family learned that the plane which he had supposedly boarded crashed in the middle of the Atlantic. No one survived. It became the most grievous period of the Kalu's lives. They conducted a burial without a corpse. For the next 4 years, Jansi was taught the secret art of black witchcraft by Sri Veruca. He was then given instructions on what to do to advance the kingdom of the Most High on Earth. Jansi was now preparing to go back to the world.
"Jansi, you must prove your love for Sesiri."
"I will do anything to prove my allegiance to the Lord."
"You love your little sister very much, don't you?"
"Yes."
"You must sacrifice her to the Most High."
"Oh, Veruca, must it be her? I could give my mother."
"It must be the human that you love most,"
Veruca said, stopping and looking straight into Jansi's eyes.
"Nothing,"
Veruca said.
"Nothing, and no one must stand between you and the great Lord Sesiri."
Jansi nodded solemnly. They were both walking along a corridor, lit by naked flames burning in metal cups along the wall. Once or twice, they passed by a hooded witch who greeted them.
"You must prepare a room in your temple where I will meet with you." There, you must eat the girl. Be sure to sanctify the place with her blood. Also, bring along another girl, so that I and those that shall appear with me on that day shall feast with you. Why are you so particular about girls, Sri Veruca? Veruca laughed. Not many witches know this. In feasting on their flesh and blood, we partake of the willpower of the womanhood. Besides, they are more emotional, so you will find them easier to hypnotize. Oh, smiled Jansi. Your temple will be called the Mystic Temple of Lord Sesiri. You will spread the power of the black witches to your world through any means within your reach. You will teach your disciples the secret arts for their own use. Accept nothing but human sacrifice. Virgin girls are the best. Whatever you need will be provided for you. Do not return until you have made preparations for the temple. You have 7 months. They were now on a platform surrounded by thick clouds of smoke. The smell of death filled the air. It was quite dark. Jansi, do not have any confrontations with your aunt. My aunt? Maureen Wachuku, your mother's sister. No confrontations with her or any of her type. They are psychic criminals. You'll be told when to arrest them. See you on Earth. Jansi bowed, turned into a vulture simultaneously, and flew away. As he was commanded, he made arrangements with the landlord and rented a two-story building in Okokomaiku, a suburb in Lagos. The search for a convenient site took him 2 months. He had no job, but his needs were supplied by agents from Netherrealm. 3 months later, he prepared himself mystically to confront his family. He thought up a convincing story and practiced hypnotic powers over and over again on people on the streets before setting off to Ikoyi primarily to get his younger sister according to the requirements of Netherrealm.